Good morning, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Sandra Hartstone Show. Well, last week was kind of an intense week as far as finding out our favorite stores are going woke. Wow. Did you see all of the news? There was Target, Kohl's, oh my gosh, Chick-fil-A, and even the thing that came out about The Chosen. Woo, we are in tough times. Well, right now, I am busy working on a documentary called America's Identity Crisis, and that is bringing me into the paths of many people that are teaching me many very enlightening things about what's going on. And I'm going to show you some of the footage today that we've been shooting. First, we're going to talk about some of the statistics and what is happening, how America is responding, which I have to say is making me very excited. And then I'm going to share with you some really interesting information I have learned. And so we're going to jump into this when we come back right after this quick message.
SAT123.com, they have put together a really incredible package: emergency backup communication systems, power systems. We've got sat phones, we've got solar panels, and also the big 400 watt solar panel behind us there. And why does this matter? Because of course, right now we are dealing with massive risk of blackouts, and the power grid is just failing, you know, intermittently, but it's going to get worse because we've also got energy shortages. Think about the lack of coal power, the diesel problems that are happening right now. If you're in the military or the National Guard or Border Patrol or law enforcement and you need to be able to function even when the power grid goes down, or maybe you're a first responder, rescue team, firefighter, paramedic, you name it, you need to know about this equipment. So SAT123.com, folks.
Thanks for your support of this platform. Use the code BTV at checkout for additional savings. BrighteonStore.com.
Hello, folks. My name is Dr. Cordy Williams, 1776 Forever Free. We're a constitutional organization that's done activism for years. Now we're launching a new series of modules that are going to help candidates get elected and avoid those scumbag consultants and campaign managers. Remember, if you want uncensored truth, go to Bridie on TV and go to 1776foreverfree.com and donate now so we can change America. God bless you and Semper Fi.
And we are back, friends. Earlier this week, I was actually in Montana doing some location scouting for the production we're working on. And when I got up one morning, there was a text came across my phone, a news update that said Montana was the first state to pass legislation not allowing transgender people to read school books or read to children in public gatherings, like at libraries and stuff. Well, I was so excited. I went, man, we're on a roll. And then the very next morning, I started getting news alerts. Every single morning, I was getting a news alert about some other company going woke. Before we jump into that, I want to introduce you our new co-host. This is Joshua Hicks. Josh, you are actually my son, as you know. I want everybody to know Josh is my son, but Josh has joined me here at Heartstone Pictures, and he is helping me work on this documentary that we're working on called America's Identity Crisis. So, Josh, I'm interested in your perspective because you are you called a millennial or a Gen Z? What are they calling your generation?
Because of my age, I'm in this weird limbo, right? But I'd say Gen Z. I'm one of the old people of Gen Z.
Okay. So after the Montana, yay, cheering for Montana, the next morning, we had some companies. Was it Target? No, we already knew about Target. Josh, I think, walk us through some slides that you want to share with everybody today. Let's see those.
Yeah. So, you know, we know about Target. They lost.
You have a slide there talking about how much? Let's see the slide there, Hunter, if you have a slide.
Yeah. Target, according to New York Post, lost $10 billion in 10 days as stocks fell following the boycott. So we're seeing the boycott working. You know, people are taking action. We're voting with our dollar. And it's very obvious across multiple industries. Bud Light, we've been talking about this for months, and not to beat a dead horse, but statistics dating back a year as to how Bud Light and Anheuser-Busch was operating a year ago, their sales are down 30%.
And picture on that one? Do you have a picture on that?
Summer is, you know, beer drinking time. So I'm interested to see where this goes through the summer as people swap their Bud Light for their local brews and start shopping locally or with different brands. It's very interesting seeing all their different marketing they're trying to do to recover from this. I'm hoping that they don't recover. And remember, it's every single Anheuser-Busch brand. That's Michelob, Landshark, all these different things, Busch Light, that you wouldn't think are Bud Light. But you just go to their website, Anheuser-Busch's website, and see what all the brands are, and make sure you're not choosing those. A lot of people may not know still that they have like almost an oligopoly on the beer market. So you need to be aware of what all these different brands are that they're controlling.
I will tell you, I got up. It was the next morning, I think, after the Montana. I got a news thing saying, you know, the two companies that I would have said will held out to the end is Hobby Lobby and Chick-fil-A. And of course, Hobby Lobby, they're cooking. They're an awesome company. But we got the message that Chick-fil-A has gone. Whoa, Josh, who is that person they've hired? What is that, a DEI, the person to, you know, be friendly to all groups?
Right. So that has to do with ESG, right? Environmental and social governance, which is one of the big things. I was in business school just not too long ago. And towards the end of that, the HR classes were big on talking, oh, we got to promote this ESG. And everyone's like, what is this? It's the environmental and social governance, which is a fancy title to say, we're going to bring this woke ideology into the workplace and make sure everyone's ascribing to it. Because if you're not going to get it at home, you need to be getting it at work. Because, you know, some other theory here is that the workplace has replaced the church and the home and inviting your friends in as your place of where you get community. So
Charlie Kirk says that he's been warning people about Chick-fil-A for a long time that they are anti-white, which doesn't make sense because it was owned and started by, you know, Caucasians. You know, I was listening to I noticed that there was a documentary that came out. I look at a lot of documentaries. And about 20 years ago, of course, before gay marriage was legalized, back when it was actually illegal to be homosexual, back when, this is more than 20 years ago, the people that had this agenda were already working it. And in schools, some week on here, I'm going to show you this clip. There was a homosexual teacher teaching elementary children, like 5-6 years old. And what he did is he was explaining to them, you know, when a man loves a man and a woman loves a woman, in our country, we aren't allowed to get married. Men that love each other can't get married, and women can't get married. And that doesn't seem fair. What did you think about that? And of course, the kids are all going, oh, no, Yeah, they should be able to get married. You see how they started like 20, 30 years ago in the schools, and we weren't even aware. I had children in school then. I wasn't aware they were doing that. So what has happened? Their plan was they had patience, and they started, that time long ago. And so that those children then grew up, they became lawmakers, and they're the ones saying, yes, this is illegal. Yes, it's legal. Yes, we can have gay marriage. You see, this is not something new. For some reason, when COVID came, they decided that was the moment for the Great Reset. I think they started COVID, basically to rain on Trump's parade. But anyway, what do you think, Josh? Did you hear any of this kind of stuff in school?
I probably did. I don't know if I have exact memories of teachers talking about that, but teachers teaching their ideology that was very much counter to the foundations of our nation was very prevalent. I don't know necessarily how much I heard about the LGBTQ plus from teachers, but I know I heard a lot of revisions of history, things that are not historically accurate, or teachers sitting up there telling the class, America is awful. The founders were all racist and slaveholders. They didn't really believe in liberty. They were bootleggers, smugglers, trying to set up a criminal enterprise. And so when you have teachers sitting there molding the minds of 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds who don't know any better, and their parents aren't teaching this stuff to them because their parents are busy working 14 hours a day, and the state's essentially raising these kids, they're learning, America is a bad racist place. And now we're seeing this with my generation as we're hitting the workforce. I'm convinced the ideology or the ideas that Gen Z are this sensitive little meek crowd, that we need this ESG sprinkled in our companies to keep them happy. That's an effect of millennials and Gen Z getting brainwashed in school by teachers preaching their own ideology that they were taught to teach at these schools and universities and teacher schools that were set up by, like we'll see in a clip later from Alex about this whole new world order that's been funded by the same people who are funding the teacher schools.
And you know, I got to say, I was very involved, like most parents, I was very involved with my kids, and we were close. But, you're at school 30 hours a week. I had no idea that the teachers were indoctrinating kids like this. And I don't think most parents did. I mean, how would we know? We're not allowed to sit in on these schools. But, Josh, tell us what happened last week, because after I got the Chick-fil-A and thought, well, it's not going to get any worse than that. Then the very next day, the news came out about The Chosen. And boy, this is a tough one. What happened is on The Chosen, they have crew from many different backgrounds, religions, races, all, which you have to do, and that I understand.
Well, and it's good. People get exposed to the gospel that way.
Well, it is, but I'm also telling you, as a Christian and as a filmmaker, you're not going to be able to pull off a production that requires that many people if you only have Christian crew. I mean, it's just not going to be possible, and I agree with you. I've never had a problem with non-believers working on my sets because that's how they're going to get exposed to the gospel. However, I think the egregious thing about what the producers of The Chosen did is they allowed them to hang their rainbow flag on the set. And I think that's what crossed the line, because that's endorsing. Am I right? That's endorsing saying, hey, we stand with you. And, I'm going to say, I don't want anybody hanging. I think it's just as wrong for you to hang a flag on a set that says, hey, I believe in committing adultery. Everybody join me. Or, hey, come over here and I'll teach you how to cheat on your taxes to increase your take home. Or, hey, abuse your parents, get your inheritance now. I mean, all those things are wrong. And I'm not going to endorse any of this. And I'm not saying we're all perfect, but, as a young person and in the film business, how do you feel about The Chosen having that rainbow flag on the set?
Well, I'm in this business as well as you are. If someone... If I had a director of photography, a cameraman, gaffer, anybody show up and want to hang really any kind of flag or whatever on their gear, I think the only one I'd be okay with is an American flag. If it's, especially if it's like an American promoting idea, or even the Chosen, it could be appropriate to have like a Christian flag on there or a cross.
Yeah.
That's cool. It aligns with the values of the organization. But
yeah,
adding in this rainbow flag, it doesn't send a good signal to the rest of the crew, to the cast, or really to anyone who's seen it online. Like, it's not that great. I know Dallas Jenkins said, you know, we'll let the show speak for what we believe, which some have said is a cop-out to actually handling this and responding. There's different ideas on
how do you feel about people calling for a boycott? That's a tough one, because, you know, it's the story of Jesus, which is, it is phenomenal. It's just one of the most phenomenal stories of Jesus ever. So this whole thing about boycotting, boy, that's a slippery slope. What's your thinking on that?
That's tough to me. You know, the devil seeks to kill and destroy, right? And he wants to pull our eyes away from the Bible. He wants to pull our eyes away from the gospel. And he wants to shield our ears from things that will set people free. You know, and
yeah.
I'm worried that if we get lost in the weeds on this pride flag being there and we call for a boycott, I think that could hurt people, because the Chosen has changed a lot of hearts. I know some older people that had hard hearts, and they see the Chosen and it softens up to the gospel.
Yeah.
Do we need to hold them? Do we need to hold the Chosen and Dallas Jenkins accountable to these actions? Yes, we need to say, hey, this isn't good. But it's not targeted.
Well, they have
putting out transgender kids. A full-on boycott, I don't believe is a good idea here, because you know, whenever you have an issue in the church, as Paul writes, you go, you approach, and you talk about it. That's
well,
what
I think the problem is not conservatives ousting. We just feel like we're being bombarded on every front, and it almost feels like if we don't hold a tough line and we start giving and taking, we're just going to be eaten up. I'm sure that's what some people are thinking. You know, Josh, maybe we ought to play that clip we had. We interviewed Alex Newman this weekend for our documentary, America's Identity Crisis, which is coming out later this year. Alex is just like an encyclopedia. This guy is an awesome journalist, and he knows a lot about what's going on. And he was sharing with us a movement called an Agenda 21. Well, it's really an agenda. And I found that very eye-opening. And I think we ought to take this opportunity now to play the clip from Alex talking about Agenda 21. So listen to this.
Yeah, so Agenda 21 is a global plan for sustainability, as they call it. And it actually impacts every single area of life. It deals with healthcare, it deals with the environment, it deals with property ownership, it deals with agriculture, it deals with the oceans. And actually, the UN very helpfully summarized it as a comprehensive plan of action intended to be implemented by every person on Earth. They said that this would require a profound reorientation of all human society, unlike anything the world has ever experienced. And when you get to chapter 36 of this document, it's hundreds of pages long. George H.W. Bush signed it on behalf of the United States. Virtually every national government in the world signed on to this. And, you know, the Uniparty in Washington, D.C. has been fully behind this from the very beginning. Bill Clinton implemented an executive order where sustainability considerations had to be part of every federal agency. So this plot requires a radical transformation in the attitudes and the values of children, which is made explicit in Chapter 36. They actually say that education is indispensable to changing people's attitudes, to be able to bring this about. And so what's so fascinating is that they're openly telling us all these things. You know, there's no conspiracy here. A conspiracy, by definition, requires secrecy. These people are in the open. They're signing international agreements that tell you what they're going to do. They say that this education needs to include a spiritual component, by which they mean something radically different than what a Christian would understand to be a spiritual component in education. You know, like all the totalitarians.
So right there, Alex says they're creating it to be a theology, a form of theology, a spiritual revolution coming with this Agenda 21, which is environmental sustainability is the mask. But what it really is about control. And we see that in a lot of these ideologies being pushed by these crazy progressives that, okay, LGBTQ plus minus divided by sign, we need to subscribe to that like a religion. When the Bible was pulled out of school, there was a void. That void has since been filled with environmentalism and the LGBTQ plus doctrine. And there's nothing new under the sun. They have priests, they have doctrine, they have holy books that are all promoting these things. So that's part of what he's talking about here.
I think they're trying to teach the young people that inclusion is the loving thing, that it's the godly thing, the loving thing to be inclusive and to, you know, but the Bible talks about that in the day when each man does what's right in his own eyes, and it's a disaster. You know, a society, whether they're Christian or not, if you live by biblical principles, that is the way that everyone has the best life. I mean, this is just proven throughout history. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. So,
is there more to what Alex has to say? Does it continue?
Yes, let's pick it back up. I wanted to interject there and just point that out. That's what he's talking about.
The last century, the UN and the forces behind the UN understand that the surest means for propagating this really ideology, theology, this comprehensive worldview that they want to instill in people, this sustainable development, the surest way to make that work is to educate children. And they make that very clear in their documents. And of course, Agenda 21 is one of many, right? You can go back all the way to the founding of the United Nations. You've got the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights, where they say in Article 26, education has to be compulsory, and it has to promote the purposes and principles of the United Nations. You can look at the founding of UNESCO, where the very first head of UNESCO, Julian Huxley, was very open about the fact that they wanted to, in his words, and this was actually a UNESCO slogan for a long time, build peace into the minds of men. And so what they were saying is we're going to use education to give children the attitudes and values that we believe will lead to peace on earth. Very open about that. They actually were pretty open back then too about wanting to create a world government. And at regular intervals, they have come together and formed these international education agreements. So in 1990, they met in Zhongtian, and they came up with the Zhongtian Declaration, where they very explicitly said that all the children need to learn from the same standards of learning. They said education is a common and universal responsibility, rather than, say, the responsibility of parents or school boards or state legislatures or even the U.S. Supreme Court. Right? By common and universal, they mean a UN responsibility. They got together in Dakar in Senegal in the year 2000. Came up with another global education agreement where they again explicitly said we need to change the attitudes, values, beliefs, behaviors of children through the mechanism of so-called education. And they've continued to do this, right? 2015, 2016, they met in Korea. They came up with a global action plan for education. And today, they're very open about their desire to standardize education around the world. The UN Education Agency, UNESCO, they have propagated this World Core curriculum. They've bragged many times about how they're driving all nations toward national testing regimes, which are aligned with these international standards that they are developing. So they're moving very rapidly to standardize education globally. And if you go back to the early records of the NEA, they wanted what they described as kind of a global school board. They want a one world education system that will prepare children to live in new thing they call the New World Order. And that's what they're preparing our children for using the public school system.
Explain to me why a country that is the superpower, the number one country in the world, wants to give up that position. Any answers there?
I'd say a five-letter word called greed.
Wow. That's very scary, but this has been in existence for a very long time, and I think this really explains why we're seeing all that's going on. I mean, in the second part of this show today, we're going to talk about the dumbing down of America and how it's shaping our kids' worldviews. But Alex wrote a book called Crimes of the Educators, which, wow, just takes your breath away. It's very disheartening, and it's very sad what they're doing. They've changed the way people learn to read so that we now only a third of Americans, you know, can really read well. And now a small majority of kids going off to college are not prepared. When you were in school, did you run into many other kids your age that had a hard time reading?
I'm not too sure if they had a hard time reading. I tended to keep myself in circles of people that were really high drive and really worked hard. I know a lot of people that believe that they are dyslexic. And if you listen to Alex speak more, you know, when he speaks or on his podcast, he talks a lot about this dyslexia problem, which we'll talk about later is about people losing the ability to read because of the way they were taught. Mm-hmm. The biggest problem that I believe was really propagated in high school that bled into university was just sheer laziness. You know, I was going to a very good university and the teachers would want to teach on a difficult subject, or one example, teach us how to use Excel. Excel is very important for really anything. I use Excel all the time. And the professor wanted to teach us how to use Excel, and this one girl threw a fit, got up in front of the class, yelling and hollering, saying she didn't want to do it, she couldn't do it, and the teacher scrapped it from the curriculum. And me and about four other students went up to the front of the room and asked the professor, hey, we're paying like $2,000 to be in this class. We thought we were going to learn Excel. Like, we're getting
tips. So did he teach it?
No. She said, well, I'm sorry. I don't want to offend anybody. And it's
one
not.
Person. So what is it? That person is offended.
One out of
so
30.
Forget it. But what about the four people that were offended? Yeah. I'm so sick of this. The minority is dominating and I'm so tired of it. But we're going to talk about more about this dumbing down of America and how that has been coming into play for a very long time when we come back.
The global currency collapse will wipe out the dollar and many other assets, and the only things that will maintain value during the global debt reset are those with intrinsic value that do not require governments, corporations, or markets to make good on their obligations. At the top of this list of intrinsic assets is physical gold and silver. These precious metals have outlasted every failed civilization and government in human history. And they are non-digital, which means they still hold value even if the power grid fails. The Treasure Island Coins and Precious Metals Company is my go-to source for physical precious metals that are delivered securely and discreetly into your hands. Visit BrighteonMetals.com to check their live pricing and in-stock coins and bars. Find out why they are my trusted source for physical metals and why they're the official sponsor of Brighteon.tv. BrighteonMetals.com.
Thanks for your support of this platform. Use the code BTV at checkout for additional savings. BrighteonStore.com.
With so much of the world's current food supply consisting of dirty, contaminated, genetically modified foods that may have been grown using herbicides and pesticides, increased scrutiny over what you put in your body is of the utmost importance. Even supposedly organic foods found on most grocery store shelves may contain toxic substances, chemicals, and other additives that can be harmful to your health. That's why here at BrighteonStore.com, we subject all our in-house products to extensive lab testing for glyphosate, heavy metals, and microbiology using our state-of-the-art spectrometry equipment to ensure the highest quality of cleanliness and purity. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
The dumbing down of America is real. It's not just a slogan, it's real. And it's a plan that was put into place well over 100 years ago. There was a man named Dewey who fell in love with what was going on over in Russia and other communist places, and he brought it back to America. He wanted to change America to be a socialist country and to get rid of God and all these other things that we see happening today. But he knew, they knew then, that America had such a strong will that they weren't going to be able to do this quickly. It was going to take a long time. So they found out, they figured out that the way to get America to fold from our way of life that we've always known it is through education. So they started a dumbing down of America agenda. And what they did was to ruin the way children read. Like, I was fortunate enough I learned the phonics method, which means you sound out the letters like b, boy. You know, A is A or A, C, sk, those sort of things. But what they did is they started taking that out and replacing it with what they call whole language or look say. This has been around a long time. I mean, over probably about 34 years ago, I did a documentary on whole language versus phonics. So I started learning about this way back then. And what happens is instead of like learning how to figure out what a word is, you just have to memorize. So probably a lot of you know your children come home and they have so many words they have to memorize this word this week. And so when they look at it, it's like looking at a painting. They have to just memorize that B-O-A-T is boat. Well, you know, some may look at it left to right. Some may look at it right to left, top to bottom. So you might get that mixed up and B-A-O-T or whatever. But what happens is they start mixing things up because it's memorized. And that is what's making so many children feel like they are dyslexic. Because the whole idea is if you can't read well, you'll get frustrated. You won't like it. You won't read. And what that does is that keeps your worldview small. And you don't read for entertainment. You don't read for joy. And you don't develop critical thinking skills. So what does that do? That robs you of your destiny. But it makes you where you're more likely to just believe what you're told and become more robotic and do whatever. But they're creating so many people feeling like they have a learning disability, and it's not true. And I'm going to tell you, one of the saddest things is we all know that John Rockefeller has influenced a lot of things, banking, the pharmaceutical industry, everything. But I'm going to tell you how evil this man was. This man came to John Rockefeller and asked him, told him all about his new education system, and John Rockefeller funded it. And he put his own children in this experimental school. And you may be aware, Nelson Rockefeller, who was the governor, has talked openly about he cannot read. He has a very difficult time reading, but because of his money, he was able to surround himself with secretaries and other people to hide this. How sad is that? Now, you would have thought that right there would have convinced John Rockefeller to walk away from this, but oh no, he's been behind a lot of this horrible stuff in education and pharmaceutical industry and all sort of things. But
and he's been gone a long time, and we're still feeling that effect.
God, isn't that the truth? I was listening to a documentary last night, and it was talking about how John Rockefeller was the big influence in the whole pharmaceutical business and ruining that. And even way back then, when they had simple cures that could heal things, if it wasn't a drug that they could sell and make money for, they were pulling it off the money market, just like we had with COVID.
Called it alternative, I'm telling you, right?
It just feels like we're being swallowed up. This agenda is so big and so powerful. And it's just like this pebble that started, and now it's a big stone. And it's just rolling over. And the problem is many of us have awakened to what's going on and we're trying, but it's like we're here and they're here. This is like David and Goliath. I mean, you know, the giant. What do you think about that? I mean, you see what I mean, Josh?
Yeah. It's a catalyst, you know, back years ago when it was John Dewey, right? Started these schools, these teacher schools, partnered with the Rockefellers and showed them the effects on it because they wanted to create better factory workers. They didn't want independent thinkers. Yeah. And it used to be people learned how to read by reading the Bible based on our founding documents, the Constitution or the Federalist Papers, which were arguments of our early government. That's how people learned to read, was documents.
And what they did is then they started teachers' college so that they could teach the teachers how to teach. So there's no teachers today. They're doing this on purpose. They're doing what they were taught and then how they were taught to teach. So it just keeps snowballing effect. And so what all this has done is it's changing what we would call the biblical worldview. Like even during the founding of our nation and even during the Civil War, 90% of the population could read. And if a president gave a speech, he gave a speech more on like a 10th grade level. Now when presidents give a speech, they do something more like, you know, what is it, like a fifth grade level or something.
If even. Well, our current president may be not going there. Well, but I don't know if you said the statistic earlier, but we have 90 million adults in the United States are functionally illiterate. They may be able to read up to like a kindergarten, first, second grade level at best, but they're not reading. They can't. They were not enabled in school, right? School's supposed to educate, enable,
and you know how much money that takes? You know how much money that takes out of the system because of lower paying jobs? And what the study shows is if you start learning whole language, after like a couple of years, your brain, or even less time than that, your brain is so wired to just learning that way that you really have a very difficult time learning phonics and then doing all of this.
You know a terrible statistic to come out of this?
What?
In, you know, about my age range, let's say from what I've read is about from age 21 to 35, out of that whole population, 8% will read an entire book cover to cover this year. 8% will read one book. That means 92% of the up-and-coming age of leadership in organizations and government is not actively reading. And an even smaller percentage will read books into the double digits. You know, only a few percent will read upwards of 10 books a year. And that is terrifying. On one hand, if you're my age, you're like, okay, well, if I'm reading and educated, it might be easier to grab power later. But that's a selfish view we don't want to have. We need to realize that we need an entire society of people who are reading and getting educated and continually forming their mind. What school does is it teaches us to compartmentalize and segment our learning. And, okay, I'm going to go to school for 9 months. I learn then. Summer, I'm not going to learn. I'm going to goof off and play games. You go through 12, you know, you graduate 12th grade, so you don't go to college. Okay, I'm done learning. I'm not going to learn anymore. I'm done, which is ignorant. You're learning all the time. But you have to apply yourself to learn these more philosophical principles of theology and government.
Yeah, but if you can't read, it's too painful. It's too hard.
That's true.
Well, we recently interviewed a man named Dan Smithwick, which some of you may know. He's with the Nehemiah Institute. He is also part of our documentary, but he talks about Pearce testing. He created a Pearce test, which has really been called the gold standard. And it tests our Christian kids on five categories, like economics and social issues, et cetera. And what he does is he comes up with, it measures you on how much you see the world through a biblical worldview or a world worldview. And man, it is scary. What he is finding is each year, our numbers become less and less biblical view. And now our kids are actually thinking about the world through socialist viewpoint, like the government needs to take care of me, that sort of thing. We have a clip from that interview we had with Dan, and I'd like to play it now for you to hear what he has to say.
I have been known as the guy that does the Pearce testing. And we have worked with over 1,000 schools. Over 100,000 tests have been taken. So it's a lot of data that we have for norming purposes. But again, it's been with Christian schools mostly. 90% plus of my data is from Christian schools. So we have been watching for three decades how are young people thinking in these five areas. And are they reasoning from Scripture or are they simply going with the flow of culture? Which unfortunately is what we have been observing. We test youth groups in evangelical churches. Most of them are going to public schools. So we get their mindset, their worldview on these five spheres, 70 question test, and it's always the lowest. For the last five plus years, youth groups always test in the socialist category. Again, these are our kids, Christian homes, going to church in a youth group, which is supposed to be the better of our Christian kids. But they're in a school system that 30 plus hours a week is saying, here's how you need to think. And they're buying it because they're not being challenged by the churches of how to think in these areas. I have been saying for some time about the PEERS test, you know, it's these five areas again: politics, economics, education, religion, and social issues. I've been saying that the church is stuck in the R category. We're just focused on religion. You know, make sure our kids know what's right about heaven, hell, God, Satan, the Bible, you know, how to get to heaven when you die, but not necessarily how to live biblically before you die. That's a problem. So the church is losing its future. I've also been saying that worldview-wise, we are going the way of Europe, which means today the European continent, 5% of the people are in church on Sunday, where Christianity was birthed. 5% go to church on Sunday. During colonial American days, we were 85% church attendance. Now we're less than 25%. And if these PEERS results keep going south, we will be like Europe within 20 years. Less than 5% are in church.
Okay.
So when he's saying we're going to become like Europe, right? 5% in church, right? That's a low number related to colonial America. Also, the traditional European worldview on government was that, well, if there's a social problem, the government needs to fix it. Okay, we've seen more and more of that, right? America, when it was founded, her colonists up through the early days, up until really recently, if Americans saw a problem, our system is designed where you go fix it, right? Say I see a bunch of homelessness in my area, I'm going to get my friends together that I know work hard, and we're going to go try and fix that problem. We're not going to call the government or some government agency to fix it. That's not the American way. The American way is if you find a problem, you find a committee, and you fix the problem. You don't organize government to do it. And we're falling more and more into that as well as we progress into the socialistic European worldview. Just a comment there.
Okay. Go ahead. Let's continue with Dan.
The PEERS test is unusual from most tests in that the scoring ranges from minus 100 to plus 100. We didn't want 0 to 100 because we didn't want a 0 to imply that someone has no worldview. It's impossible not to have a worldview, right understanding of worldview. So the scale minus 100 to plus 100. So if you score below 0 on the PEERS test, you can only do that by buying into socialist ideas of the way life should work. Things about government control, things about economics, that would say, we really need strong government controls over things. And there's just several statements that would make someone go that way. Scores of 70 or higher is where we want to be to have what we classify as a mature theistic worldview. You have to know your Bible. You have to believe that the Bible addresses all these areas of life, that there are verses that speak to these different areas of life. So 70 and above is where we like to see results, and we say, good job. You really do have a Christian worldview. Below 0, you are on the opposite end of the spectrum. This is the worldview that says he's not there. This is the worldview that says the Bible is not the inerrant word of God. It's ideas of men. And those two are at war. Here's probably the biggest thing that's going on in America. We know of a famous church father, St. Augustine, 4th century, 5th century, still today recognized by Catholics and Protestants alike as perhaps the most significant church father in America's history. He gave us an identity in the West that America is a part of, identity that's being lost in America. His most famous book, The City of God. In that massive book of 700 pages, which I've read, which I drew from for developing the PEERS test, he argues every culture is going to build a city, one of two cities. It'll either be the city of God, where we build culture city meeting culture, using God's ways, God's truth, God's principles, or we will build a city of man. There is no God. We just make up ideas. We'll make up how we think life should be. So therefore, gay lifestyle is just as valid as a straight lifestyle because we say we want that. Transgenderism, why not? If we want to, if little kids think they need to be the opposite, sure, why not? It's, after all, it's our city. We can make it the way we want, right? So we have a war going on in America. Which city are we going to have, the city of God or the city of man? That's the war that's in America, and we're losing. As Christians, we're losing that. Because for whatever reason, the evangelical world in America has said, it's not our job to build a city. It's our job to get us to heaven. That's an enormous mistake within the evangelical world in America. And so we're letting other people tell us how the city should look, how the city should function. How well is that working? When you look out across America's landscape, what's happened in the last several years, the chaos, the burning, the looting, the tearing down of statues. Do you think we have an identity problem in America? You better believe it. We do not know who we were. We do not know who we are. We do not know our Creator. It's a disaster.
Well, I think Dan's right, and it's, well, you talk about scary. You know, Josh, I've kind of lived my life. You have your whole life ahead of you, and this is what you're facing. So tell me your thoughts.
People are waking up. My generation, Gen Z, they're saying is the most polarized generation that America has ever seen. A portion of us are very conservative, focused on Jesus, looking for God's will in our life and trying to follow it. And then on the other end, we have people that worship Aphrodite in the LGBT plus minus divided by community, right?
Yeah.
We're very polarized. There's not a lot of people in the middle. You really hear from a lot of this crazy leftist ideology more because they're much louder. I like to say, especially when I hear older people showing their distress for the future of the nation that they've helped build, they're worried. And I tell them, don't worry. Those of us who have our heads on straight, who are the future leaders of this nation, you don't hear us because we're too busy having our face studying to prepare for who we need to become. And we're working on it and we're getting there. You just don't hear us because we're not crybabies. We're not going to go out screaming and hollering.
Well, so now tell me, wait a minute. What are you doing? Tell me exactly, what do you mean by all this? Because now you're getting me excited.
Well, for one, you know, you and me, we're working on, you and I, we're working on America's identity crisis. And it's a message to my generation to wake up and find their identity and realize they've been lied to. So that's one thing that's being done publicly, privately, stay in the word. And I read a lot of books from our founders or people earlier in our country that had a better understanding of what America is. I was just at the record store, the vinyl shop yesterday, and I picked up some albums from the 70s that are Americans at the time talking about their views of America 50 years ago, talking about the last 200 years of history, right? I'm going to give that a listen. I want to see what they had to say, trying to pinpoint where we turned. A number of my friends that have normal jobs, right? Work in business, sales, whatever. They have their heads on straight. They have worldviews that are getting better, that are getting corrected from all the crazy ideology and education. And what's happened is especially in COVID, they were woken up to a lot of the corruption and a lot of the problems. And it's really making them want to at least be a voice where they are and in their circles. Because the family unit or your close friends are the foundations of society. And if we can have a good impact there, it will spread. That's why they want to get rid of family. That's why they didn't want us, especially in COVID, meeting up together and just meet digitally.
Is your generation fearful of the future or not?
from my friends at least, whose heads are on straight, they're very worried. They're worried about where we're going. And, you know, they all say, oh, well, I want to have a wife and kids and have a good job and provide for them and, you know, live a good life. Mm-hmm. And they're worried. And I think that worry is making a lot of them want to move to be leaders. And maybe 5 years ago, they wanted to subscribe to power. They wanted power someday for the sake of power. But I think that drive is now being converted to wanting power to fix the problems.
Wow.
And shape our future.
Well, that's very exciting to hear. Half the time I get up every day, I feel like I need to apologize to the younger generation because, you know, on our watch, we allowed a lot of things to happen. My parents watch loud things to happen, and then we just let it keep going. And now we're leaving your generation a mess. God, please use this next generation. Save us. Lord God, we need you. Well, we have run out of time. Josh, thank you for your input today. And I want to say to everyone, thank you for joining us. That was Dan Smithwick with Nehemiah Institute, if you want to find out more. We're going to see you here next Monday. Take care.